All right. What's going on, it's Mario. Final Approach podcast again. We got like a almost a repeat one if you've been kind of listening to the podcast, but this is going to be a real good one and real focused. So before we get into it, once again, we always thank our partners that join us and do stuff, and we got one today, and I'll tell you about them. But we got Federal Ammunition and Weatherby and Rogers Sporting Goods, and of course Leupold. And Dogtra. And we got Pete Fisher from Dogtra. We got David Bingham today. If you've listened or seen us before, you've seen David on the Last Pass episodes. If you have joined our podcast or checked it out at some point, you've seen Pete Fisher from Fisher Kennel. And now he does a bunch of stuff with Dogtra and is a consultant and has been a dog trainer for, a good amount of time. So the experience here on the dog side is pretty good. I am the novice. I'm relying on Pete and David to walk us through this. And what we're gonna focus on today is your electronic collar, your e-collar, and how you can use it to make the dog better, to make yourself better, to correct, to whatever you need to do. It is a tool that you need to know how to use and what to do. So if I was gonna say, let's start somewhere, Pete, where would we start?
Well, thanks for having me back. It's been just a couple of weeks, so I don't know if that's if I'm that popular or you're that short on having people on. So let's go with
No,
the first. How's that?
I love it.
Okay. Long before we ever start with a remote training collar, we have to have what we call lay the basics obedience, the foundation, some people call it. And a foundation is probably good terminology because if we similar to a house, we don't just start building the house by putting the roof up and the
For
shingles
sure.
on. We got to start with the foundation. So that's the foundation is what I call the basics of any obedience training, whether it's a hunting dog or a pet dog. And that basics are come to me, go stationary, go away from me. So they're just basic obedience commands, walk at my side. It really isn't all that complicated. And we teach it all with what's called a leash and a choke chain, which is really not made to choke the dog, but it's our steering wheel. It's used to guide the dog and show him what we want. And then it's just a question of the leash and the choke chain. The metal chain can be used as negative reinforcement. And when the dog figures out and complies, then it's positive reinforcement. So that's long before we ever invest in a remote training collar, before we ever put it on the dog, those are the basics that should be done before we ever. And the dog should be very proficient at those commands. And before we take it to the next step with a remote training collar.
And they need to, like you said, they need to know them, and anything with the collar, they need to know what you want them to do. You have practiced it, you have trained with it, you've done all this. David and I go through this, like if we have a bad morning, we need to step back and go back to the basics and be like, okay, let's focus on this because we're off the rails right now. So, and you won't be using the collar unless they know that command, because like you can't just get a collar and go, well, I'm just gonna stimulate the dog because whatever, he's not coming heel. But if you've never taught him heel, like you're already ruining the dog, like you're already screwing up.
You've got the cart in front of the horse. And so when I do question and answers with individuals that I'm either helping with the dog or we're on a podcast or I'm answering customer service type questions, and we before we ever engage that dog with a remote training collar, I tell them what I just told you earlier about obedience training and the basics. The dog needs to know that. He may not be proficient at it off leash, but he should be proficient with it on the leash. Okay. So there's the biggest difference. And then I start with this. The most important piece of equipment when I start using the remote training collar is a rope or leash. And many times I no sooner get that out of my mouth and the person stops me and says, "No, Pete, you don't understand. My dog's actually pretty good on the rope or leash. So my problem is when he doesn't have the rope or leash on. And then
Okay.
I go on to explain, here's why that rope or leash is the most important piece of equipment when we are starting e-collar conditioning. We need to put the dog on the rope or leash. That is how we guide the dog to show him what we want. That dog, just the day we start with a remote training collar, the first time that dog feels the static form of stimulation,
Right.
and I call it that sensation, he or she has no idea what that is. Okay.
Correct.
So the rope or leash is, let's say if we're going to start with the recall command, the dog knows the hear command. It just doesn't perform it off leash. If I don't have, I think I touched on this last time, but if I don't have the dog on the rope or leash and I apply stimulation, I've got about a 50% chance of the dog coming back to me and complying with the command. The other for 50% of the time, it might go the other way. So
No doubt.
the rope or leash is what I use to bring the dog in like a fish on a line, and so that I can show him what I want. And just because the dog does it once, Mario, doesn't mean the dog knows the command.
Right.
Okay? It's
Right.
repetition. It's over and over and over and over and over. And then we start putting in other factors such as distractions. Then we start with most of this I do in a very confined area where I don't have other dogs. I don't have nosy neighbors coming
Right,
on over and saying,
right,
"Hey, what is that you got in your hand?" You know what I mean?
right, right,
So we early on we start we want our dog to be successful. And if the fewer distractions, the better. So the rope or leash is the most important part that I believe you should have when you start e-collar training. Now, eventually, if it's done right, we take the rope or leash off. And
right.
we do that in little steps. Maybe we drop the rope or leash and lose some of our, give the dog some of its freedom, but we still can reach over and grab it and pick it up. Reinforce that command and bring the dog in. And I use that in all three steps. Come to me, go stationary, go away from me. Come to
Right.
me, reel him in, give a little jerk. I'm using light stimulation, complies with the command, sit for tap, and go away from me into a kennel. And I've got him on a rope or leash so that I can guide him through all of those.
Yeah, that's the backup to, when you give stimulation, like you said, 50-50 shot. Like David wasn't here for this, but I'll tell you a short, quick one that, it's opening duck season. This is years ago. A guy has a new dog. He runs out. He breaks, right? And the guy, hits the collar and had it up pretty hot. And, we're in a flooded corn section and corn's tall and whatever. And he has lost his dog. He doesn't know where he went. And he's calling, blowing the whistle and hitting the collar and nothing, right? This goes on for a couple of minutes and I'm like, you need to get out and find your dog because we don't know where he is. And I shit you not, Pete.
Dog
He
is
was
gone.
at the truck. He was at the truck 200 yards away underneath the truck, shaking because that guy had bought a collar, never conditioned the dog. The dog didn't know what was going on. And the only thing the dog would understand is where to run for my safe place, right? Was to the truck. He knew where the truck is. I don't even know how. Like he figured all that out. So when you say the dog's got a 50-50 shot of coming back to you, that is. I mean, it might be more. Like, it depends on the dog, right? And what you've done with them. But that is one of the craziest things I've seen. And I don't, David could talk about stuff like this. Like, I've definitely learned stuff from David where he's anticipating something and knows when to do something before he has to use the collar. And I think that's where I'm getting better, where before maybe I would rely on the collar more. Now I'm relying more on me knowing more. Maybe blowing the whistle, maybe doing something before the dog gets in trouble.
Precisely. Once you are beyond your basics and your e-collar conditioning, and you have a dog that's working at a fairly high level, and we're talking retrievers now. So a dog that has the master hunter title in my world, a dog in the field trial world that's qualified all age or has points towards his field championship title. Those are dogs that are trained, in my opinion, at a fairly high level. And then go spend an afternoon with one of these individuals that's what they do day in and day out.
Yes.
And you but might be surprised how little these individuals push the button when
For
they're
sure.
training. Yeah, I was amazed. I went and spent a couple of days with a well-known professional trainer in the field trial world, Danny Farmer, and Danny's in the Retriever Trainers Hall of Fame. Wonderful trainer, knows, forgot more than I'll ever know about it, and I was really amazed how little he pushed the button the days that I was with him. So and so that it is a it's a very powerful tool in the story you just described. That doesn't surprise me one bit. I mean, the dog went back to its safe haven, and that, yeah, I mean, they got a phenomenal sense of where they are in the field. You know, we've all heard stories about dogs finding their way home, been lost for how long. They do have a great homing instinct, and so this dog, the story you told, went to a safe haven and crawled under the truck. So that's all the ways to do it ass backwards, as we say. I mean, and it's that's not the only story out there like that.
Oh, I'm sure of it. So let me go to David. So David, like, you know, I've learned a lot more training with you, and then like your training when you go down to Telus's, or you've trained with like master guys, you know, just like Pete and this caliber of guy, you know, you're learning a lot of that kind of stuff. But I think, like I said, I think I've learned stuff from you on watching you work and making sure I make moves, because I always go back to there's no bad dogs, there's just bad trainers. So that's on me. So if I know more, I can keep the dog out of trouble before he gets into trouble. And before I need to use the collar, maybe I use the whistle, or I do, you know. So I don't know if you want to, if you got anything on your mind there, because like I said, I know I've learned a bunch of stuff like that from you.
Yeah, I think the most important thing that circling back to Pete's point is you get your foundations, you get your basics, however you want to say it. You're teaching the dog essentially how to turn off pressure. You're not just, for example, if you have him on a long line you're working on here and he doesn't come here, it's reinforcement. Pressure comes on with the pinch collar or the short collar, whatever you have to bring him into you. I like to train for success. I don't want to set my dog up for failure when I'm training, especially when we're in basics. We want the dog
Sure.
to enjoy training, to be, have a positive mindset. We want him to enjoy working. So we want to really reinforce the good behaviors. And when it's a bad behavior, we correct it. But then when he does it good again, we're happy with him, we're joyful, that kind of thing. Also, a thing I do when the dog's young and I have my collar here, my training collar, I put this on when we're eating or we're doing fun stuff around the house before I ever use it. So he associates my collar when it comes out. It's good. We're gonna go have fun. We're gonna go have food. We're gonna go outside. We're gonna do all these things. So when I pull my collar out when they're 6 years old, it's the same attitude as when they were 6 months old. They're excited. They're ready to go to work. And then I think the big thing for me is when I'm training or even just in like basic obedience kind of stuff, I want the dog to understand the concept. I want him to know this is what I want. This is how I do it. This is how, if I don't do it, this is the correction. This is how I turn off that correction. And it's the same thing with a pinch. It's the same thing with the collar. The dog's just looking to turn off that pressure. It's like, oh, I made a mistake, but I know what he wants. If I do what he wants, the pressure goes away. And I think a lot of times people kind of, they look too much for the collar to teach the command and not as a reinforcement, as a, hey, you know what you should do. This isn't it. Correction. Let's do it this way versus, hey, I throw the collar on and all of a sudden he knows how to do a 250 yard angle back across the channel. That's not what we're looking for. We're looking for success. We're not looking to set our dogs up for failure.
Right. And Pete, you could explain that more, like, you know, like David's saying, you know, you're not supposed to use, you're using the collar for the correction, but you also want them to learn what you want them to learn and how to take that pressure off and that stimulation, because the whole point of the whole situation is for them to understand and learn what you're doing, right? And what you need them to do, instead of like, I'm just going to stimulate the dog. He's gonna like come back to me because may, you know, he felt the stimulation and he comes to his safe place, but we didn't learn anything, right?
Correct. And I believe the dog learns, just like people learns when they are not under all that excessive pressure. And you know, it reminds me of a story or a line that I was in a conversation with a retriever trainer down in Alabama, where my dogs have gone in the wintertime, Richard Misman, and we got talking about just what we're talking about now, and he made the statement. He said, it's more fun if they do it because they want to do it.
For sure.
Yeah,
For
as
sure.
opposed to being
Yeah.
made to do it. So there are times when in training we have to show them and then make them do it, okay? But then we try and get them, the goal is to get them to do it without the pressure, okay? So that's where the learning comes in. And when you run a dog in competitions like hunt tests or field trials, we practice this over and over and over and over. And we try and replicate what we think the dog is going to run into when it's in a competition or a hunt test, okay?
Right.
But the difference being, when you get him to the hunt test and he's running a triple with a double blind, it is just you and the dog, and there are no training aids. There's no training collar. So
Yep.
this is where you find out, have you modified that dog's behavior in training
Yes.
with the remote training collar? Have you modified it enough so that you can take them and compete or run at a hunt test at that level and get basically the same performance out of the dog as when he would have the training collar on? Now, that's
100% agree.
our ultimate goal when we're hunting as well.
Right,
Now,
right.
when I'm hunting, I only get so many opportunities to hunt. Well, I get probably more than the average guy does, but guess what? I want to enjoy my day in the field, and my dogs, when they hunt, they have the training collar on. And there's a heck of a lot of days I never push the button,
But there,
but
it's
I
on.
have it. Yes, it's on in case I need it. So it's like life insurance. Better to have it, not need it, than to need it and not have it. So,
Well,
but when
go
you're
ahead.
running the events, you can't have a unit on them. You can't have a
Correct.
training collar on them. And that's the acid test. Did you train this dog to a level that it can do all this work without the training aid?
There's no doubt about it. You have to have them, like David said, you have to have them used to the collar. You know, you can't be putting the collar on them for the first time and they're trying to scratch it off the whole time while they're trying to heal, right? Because you didn't condition them to just even wearing it, right? And then obviously the proof is there. Like when the collar comes off, is your dog a good citizen or not? You know what I mean? Because they'll know the difference. The collar's on, the collar's not on. They understand when I'm getting stimulation and what's giving me the stimulation for sure. So I can tell you for sure, like, well, here's one thing that I've learned after my second dog and then going into this dog. The second dog that I had was, you know, now I'll speak from inexperience. It's definitely my fault. I'm a little inexperienced training the dog and what the dog can do. And he, you know, I don't want to say he was a little stubborn, and that's probably because I didn't repetition enough, teach enough, do whatever. And then he would kind of, like, I don't want to say fold under the stimulation or the pressure. He would kind of shut down a little bit. So, and that's on me. But the thing that I learned is the dog was feeding off of me. And I don't know if people really talk about this much, but one of the trainers said, he's feeding off of your emotions. Like you're getting mad, you're getting upset, you're getting like the dog is feeding off of what you're doing. And he is so in tune with you that he is in tune with you and things aren't going right. And I don't know if that's a true thing or whatever, but that's what one of the guys told me. And then I started controlling me and being calm, talking calm, walking through a situation, helping him get what he needed to get and learn as we go. And then it got better. So that was on me for sure.
Well, your attitude when you're working with a dog is really, in my opinion, no different than when you're working with a kid. And you know, the dog, the kid realizes just how good the trainer is, how good the mentor is. And I really believe that you have to set out with your training, have a goal in mind, and what am I going to accomplish? Okay. And we got to get all our tools, you know, ready and ready to go, and the dog should be happy and want to work, and that's, as you said earlier, that's on us making sure that that is learned. That's a learned behavior. And an example, the unit you have laying on your counter in front of you, that's our new X model that just came out within the last year, and those units have a tone on them. When you turn them on, that tone comes on. And when
Yes.
you ought to see my four dogs, when I turn that unit on and get ready to, yes, I mean it's working time. It's excitement. That's what it
Yes.
is. It's the best way I can describe it. It's excitement. They don't go run and hide in the kennel or under a chair or try and they come to me because they know this is positive time. It's fun time. Retrievers want to retrieve. I've got
Yes.
one pointer. He wants to hunt. This means we're going out in the field. We may not even be working. Okay. We're just
Right.
going out for a 1 mile walk. And I've
Right.
got the training collars on them. And they just know that that is time where they get to be with Pete and they get to do something that's positive.
For
So
sure.
it's kind of like Pavlov's dog ringing the bell, and the dogs get excitement because it's feeding time. So this really this tone in this, when I first started, most of our units didn't have this tone in them over the
For
years.
sure. Agreed.
And now in using those units exclusively and extensively every day on my dogs, every time I just took mine for a walk before we started this, and they're all standing there. I got a four dog unit, and all of them are standing there wagging their tails, getting in line to get the receiver put on them. So,
They know that tone. They know that
yeah.
tone. You know what I mean? It's just like anything else. Like I would joke, my first dog was in tune with everything about hunting. And the one place we would go, I swear to God, he knew how far we drove. And then as soon as we hit the gravel road,
Hit the
he would
gravel
start
road,
whining
yes.
because he knew we were there. And I would tell people, I said, "Oh, just wait, roll down the window as soon as we hit the dirt road, and you'll hear him." And I'd hit the dirt road, and he'd go, rrr, rrr. Like you could. The kennel was shaking. He knew what was going on. So, and the thing where I screwed up, I was getting frustrating when I was hunting with my second dog, and then he would shut down, and we would have a bad exchange, and things wouldn't go right. That was on me. So I was like, okay. If we're not having a good day, I got to get him to where he needs to be. I got to make this fun, and I got to figure out my way of dealing with the dog so we're having a good time, because this is the time where we're supposed to be having fun. So like I said, I'm getting better at this. With this dog, I think I've gotten a lot better. So, but there's a lot of people out there that might be struggling with something. So that's why we're talking about all this. So I think this is all great, great info.
I think you touch on something that's really important, though, Mario, is the difference between your second dog and Jet, right?
Right.
The amount of pressure each can take is totally different. And people need to realize that, hey, just because my first dog could take a little more pressure, maybe the dog you have now needs substantially less. Not every dog, there's not a one size fits all for dogs. And when we're talking about pressure and corrections, some dogs, you just yell at them and they'll stop and look at you and be like, oh, okay, I know what you mean. Some dogs take a little more pressure, but it's important to find out where your dog is. And to,
Right.
I mean, my goal in training, which I think every trainer's goal should be, is I want to use the least amount of pressure to accomplish what I'm looking for that day. So if that means maybe I use zero, or maybe it's a yell, or maybe if it's nitro obviously takes, he's a little more high strung, can take a lot of pressure. He's
Right.
going to be different than Jettis, who is different than
For
your
sure.
second dog. So you really have to learn your dog. And if it's your first dog or second dog, I always tell people it is 10 times better to use too little pressure than it is too much pressure. So if you're going to err and you don't have your dog dialed, or maybe it's a new dog, maybe you got to start a dog and you're not sure,
Right.
go on the low end first and then learn your dog and kind of learn what he responds to and then go from there.
Well, and Pete talked about, and I'll let you go next, Pete, because I think the next thing is the amount of pressure, yes, but it then is when to use it, right? Because we're not going to use it all the time, and correctful use of it, right?
True. And I've seen this, I used to have to do more customer service calls, like I'm going to explain here, when Dogtra had fewer people at the main office. But I would try and fit the training collar to the dog and to the usage. And so many times I would get individuals that would say, well, I've got a dog that's very mild mannered. And I said, has the dog ever been on a training collar before, a remote training collar? They said, no. Then I say, how do you know that? It's mild mannered. Well, if I yell at the dog, he spooks easy, cowers. And I
Right.
said, I'm going to tell you something that the dog's threshold for static stimulation has nothing to do with how the dog reacts to your voice or if you are physically getting after him. And I've seen this so many times, it's not even funny. And when I would do dog demonstrations, I'd pick people out of the crowd that wanted to feel what the stimulation feels like. And I'm more than happy because I'm one of those that says if you're going to use this on your dog, you should feel what it feels like yourself.
Yeah.
So invariably, I mean, I did career day at the school so many times. My wife used to work at the local Albany High School, and I would be in there with a dog, and of course, my class being an entrepreneur was very popular because,
Right.
I had dogs with and. Invariably, when I would do this, I saw times where I might have a 250-pound football player sitting up in the top, and he couldn't take the level of stimulation as high as a little 110-pound
Yeah.
person in the front row. So
Yeah.
that really depends. You cannot, and I tell this story all the time. Back when I had the training kennel, one of the toughest hombres I ever trained with a remote training collar was a dog by the name of Murph. And Murph was a Jack Russell Terrier, and he was a tough little guy, and he could take a high level of stimulation. So it goes to another thing that I tell people in customer service when I work with our customer service people in California: size of the dog does not equate to what level of static stimulation that dog will take.
Right.
And many times, the forgotten ones are the little dogs. The little lap dogs, and people think, well, the little lap dogs don't need to be trained. Well, they can get into just as much garbage
For sure.
and be as obnoxious as a big dog. So hence the reason we make small units in a remote training collar. So
For sure.
that's something that I always try and get across to people is just because your dog is a big dog doesn't mean he's going to take a high threshold of stimulation to get his attention, or just the opposite with the little ones. So you got to fit, you got to really know the dog. But one of the things when I'm dealing with retriever people, and as soon as they tell me the first thing I ask is, has the dog had experience with a remote training collar yet? Most of the time it's going to be no. Then I want to know the breed of dog. And if it's a Labrador retriever, that's a
Right.
medium to a large dog. I
Right.
always go it nowadays with the unit you have on in front of you there. That's the 1900X.
Right.
And the reason I go with that, it is a high output unit. And a lot of times people will say, well, wait a minute, Pete, I don't think my dog needs high output. And I said, well, I understand, but you have a truck with an 8-cylinder in it, but it also has a gas pedal. You dictate how far you push the gas pedal down. That has a dial up on the top, very
Yes.
conveniently
Yep.
located.
Right
And
there.
you that's dictates how much stimulation we use. So just
Yeah.
because it's high output doesn't mean it's on high output all the time.
Yeah.
And then the other advantage to that unit is when you go to the little bit bigger unit, guys, it's going to have a bigger battery in it. And what does that
Right.
mean? Longer life in between charges. So
Right.
those are all the things that, as somebody goes out and starts looking for a remote training collar, and your
Right.
best bet is to call and talk to customer service because we have trained them. And what I see nowadays, unfortunately, is some of the retail stores that sell this product, their people are not very good at knowing
No.
what unit they're not very good at all. So
No. Retail has totally changed. I mean,
yes.
and it used to be you could walk into a store and you would get like incredible customer service, knowledgeable
Yes.
people. I don't want to say those days are gone. I can speak for going to Rogers Sporting Goods. We do a lot of stuff with Rogers. I go to the waterfowl weekends. I go to the sales events. Like I go there, that is our main source of our brand and how where we ship and our main distributor, right? I can say, the guy in the archery department is an archery hunter. The guy at the counter for calls knows the calls, the fishing rods, but you can't find that like you're talking about, you walk into a bigger store, a big box store, you know, you can name 100, you can name, well, you can name three or four of them, and I'm telling you, the service is not there. So I would say, like you said, call, do your research, look at what you want in a caller. You know, like David has a bigger transmitter. He runs the Edge RT, like he runs that. He's used to that, right? He's used to that size. He uses it in field trials. Like you could speak on this, David, like why you run that. Like I run this one because I want it smaller. I'm gonna hunt a bunch. I want to be able to grab it, maybe clip it on my waders, hanging around my neck. I want it to be small so I can get to it. And I always like having it in my hand, so I don't mind having that small one. All the buttons are like on this unit, the buttons are a lot bigger, easier to get to. And I know, like you were saying, Pete, I know where my vibration button is. I know where my tone button is, so I can use those maybe before stimulation. So all my fingers are on the right things that I need, right? So David, well, I mean, you're using that transmitter. I mean, you're used to that and you love that. Why?
Yeah, I mean, I've gone through, I don't even know, probably
Yeah.
six or seven transmitters in the last 15 years of duck hunting, and I always had my training collar and then my hunting collar. And it got to the point a couple of years ago, I was like, you know what? I'm done with this. So I got a bunch of these. I have two or three of these, and I got about four of the receivers with different colors on it. And
Yeah.
for me, I use the Edge because two things. I found out I got better results out of it was Bandit originally and now Nitro.
Right.
If I practice how I play. So if I'm hunting's like the play time, right? So but if I use the exact same commands, corrections when I'm hunting and I learn, I got way better results than if I was changing it up between practice and play. So for me, I use this because I don't have to toggle between constant and momentary. I have a vibrate on this one. And for me, my fingers, if you have gloves on, no issues. You can get to the low, to the medium, both would be high.
Right.
And I found that as we've kind of gone, I run the dog more than I shoot half the time. So I like to just use this
For sure.
collar, have the gloves on. My dog gets the exact same commands if we're training on a Monday or if we're shooting on a Wednesday or Saturday, Sunday. So for me, this collar has been amazing. I have three or four different receivers. I have a white one when we're snow goose hunting, and then
Yeah.
I have black ones for hunting, and then I run bright orange when we're training. I don't know if you can see that.
Yeah, yeah.
I run bright orange or bright yellow when I'm training,
Yeah.
and for me, it's the best color I've had. This is my old one. This one's beat up. I've had this one for years. So durability is great. Dropping in the
Yeah.
water, no issues. I've done that a bunch, and honestly, it's the best one I've had that's lasted the longest. So I've stuck with it and I don't plan to go to anything else.
Well, and that's what I said. Like when I called Lorraine at headquarters and said, "Hey, you know, do you guys want to do some stuff? Me and Dave have been using Dogtra for a long time." And I told her what unit I have, and she started laughing. And she's like, "Oh my God, we haven't made that in 100, you know, forever long." And I was like, "Well, you know, like sorry, but it's still working. Like I don't know what to tell you." So I
Yeah.
mean, that's the reason I have it. That's the reason we do stuff together now, because it's like, you know, I've gone through a bunch of other collars and nothing lasted, and I just got tired of it and finally, you know, worked my way into a Dogtra one. And that, man, I still have that unit. It's in the truck. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
I think a big thing is, especially with hunting situations, you obviously don't find this in training. When it gets real cold out and your iPhone battery just dies, shuts off, these don't. These, like, I've used these up in Washington when it's cold outside, right? You got the dog in a dog hunt, got a heater blowing through the back of it, cardboard boxes on the base of it. Your phone doesn't work, but the collars, they still work. So that's really impressed me about these.
Yeah, battery life, durability. I mean, Pete, you guys for sure have nailed that. You know what I mean? For trainers and for hunters, you know, for us in the elements. I mean, it rains here where I'm at in Oregon, like it's raining every day of the season.
You know, when you think about it, it's a piece of pretty sophisticated electronic equipment. If you ever opened one up, and I've opened
Yeah.
up numerous ones, it looks like a little computer inside of there with all the electronics and the boards and the battery that powers it all. And it's pretty amazing that they withstand what they do, being dragged through the mud. And I think I mentioned this last time, even some of the oldest units that we made, the old 1200s, the old 2000 units, and those were came about in the late 1990s and early 2000s. I just traded messages with a person on our social media account for Dogtra, and he said, I've got this old unit, and it's worked for how long, but now it doesn't work anymore. After I questioned him for a while, I found out it was a unit that I just described. And I said, if I was you, I would buy these batteries off of the Dogtra.com website. And we still have that style, which is a nickel metal hydride.
Oh
And
my
I
God.
said, I'm going to say that that unit's going to work. It's just that you can't expect batteries to last for 25 years.
For sure.
So, and I haven't heard back from him yet, but I feel pretty confident, knowing that if he puts the batteries in correctly and then charges it,
He's
his unit's going to work after 25 years. So
right. So, I mean, that's the durability and everything else. I mean, that's what we're trying to do with all our stuff. Like when I go into my customer service, when I go into the Final Approach customer service emails and I see like, hey, I lost a head of a decoy, or hey, this is a, and I see all these minor, minor issues. Like that makes you feel good, because when we first bought the company and we first started, the email inbox, the customer service inbox was like a mess. This is broke, that's broke, and that's what we're striving to do. So I can appreciate like the durability on something and the customer service. Like that's a huge thing, and it should be for any customer and any brand.
I agree. And again, you get what you pay for. And unfortunately, we see way too many of these now as Amazon has ruled the world, so to speak. And I'm an Amazon shopper. I'll admit that. But I live out in the country, and I can't always get stuff. By the time I run to 30 minutes to a city somewhere, and then they don't have it, I can Amazon shop it.
For
But
sure.
what we're seeing more and more is these Chinese-made
The
product,
knockoffs.
and the training collars. A lot of them. I mean, look, I could pull it up right now, and I could
I
show
know.
you ones that look like a Dogtra transmitter and a different brand receiver, one of our competitors. And it's most of it is Chinese companies funded with Chinese government money. And they can make this stuff. You guys, I can find it on Amazon for 40, $50. And some of it, the quality control is not going to be there. The
No.
quality of it, because there is no quality control, is what I should have said. But the
Yeah,
other
for sure.
problem you run into with that product is, if you do have trouble, where do you go?
No, you're just, if you have trouble with something like that, like listen, I, there's, when like private label things started coming off of Alibaba and now onto Amazon, and it's all coming from overseas manufacturers, whether it's a shirt from Pakistan or a bag from Cambodia or whatever, and they were direct shipping, and you didn't know because you click on the thing and it's like, hey, we could ship in a couple of days, and you don't know it's coming out of somewhere else. Yeah, I mean, if you don't go with a name brand with backing and customer service, like you don't know what you're gonna get, and it could be anything. We could be talking about anything from a phone to a refrigerator, what I mean? You get what you pay for sure. And like we said, the brand is backed. There's stuff, there's customer service, there's people to talk to. If you have an issue, you can go to guys like you or come to somebody like me that I use it. You know what I mean? On the Final Approach side, I use it. I designed it. We made it. Like I know all the intricacies just like you do. So when you're looking for something like that, that is such a vital tool, yes, choose wisely, because you do get what you pay for. That's the bottom line. Doesn't matter what it is. Here's something I'll throw at, and we got about 10 minutes or so. We'll go. But one thing that somebody, Kevin, who's a younger kid who's training his pup right now, he came back to me, and this will take us back to going back to the basics. And this is what I told him to do. So I felt good that you guys were talking about the same thing that I told him to do. He said, well, when I take the dog off the leash and we're doing like remote work, he's not sitting on the whistle. And I said, okay. And he said, I'll blow the whistle. And then he just keeps running around. And I said, okay. And I said, well, don't start stimulating him. And I said, you need to get him back on the leash. You need to walk him around the neighborhood. You need to walk him down the street, blow the whistle, make sure he sits, and put the choke collar on him, like you said, like the choke chain on him. And I said, just go back to basics. I said, because you can't, and you guys have both talked about this, and I have it ingrained in my head to nauseam, is if you can't take the step forward, then you need to take the step back, finish it, and then move forward. You cannot move forward unless the last thing is exact and working.
Yes, and one of the things I would say to this young lad is that it is long-term behavior management is what we're working on. Okay,
Right.
and so yeah, I can take a training collar and put it on a dog and work on recall and some things that pretty basic stuff, and I can make it look pretty easy. And I'm like, holy mackerel! People are like, well, what's your next stack? You're going to walk on water for us? And but that doesn't mean just because the dog sits once doesn't mean it knows sit, just because it recalls to hear. So it is long term and it's behavior management. So it's over and over and over. So to his point, what I would start doing is I'd put him on the rope or the leash and I'd make sure the dog knew sit, and I would use the quick jerk snap on the leash to reinforce it, okay? Followed by
That's right.
positive. Then we start substituting the one hard whistle blast. At the same time, we say sit. Hard tweet, jerk. And then we take away the sit command and we just use the whistle. And then we start putting him at a distance from us on a long rope or leash, tweet. And then I get him to sit at a distance. And then I bring him back in. I use light stimulation, sit, nick. Positive reinforcement. Then same way with the whistle. So it is what we started out almost an hour ago, 47 minutes ago.
We
We
come right
started out
back.
with that foundation, that building block. And here we are right back talking to the importance of the foundation of the building block process.
Because no matter what level of training you're at, and David has shown this a lot to me, and as well as James, one of my buddies here who trains, is it doesn't matter what day and what you're doing, it doesn't matter how far you are along, if there is a hiccup in the training that day, you need to step back and bring it back to whatever started, the basic of that hiccup, finish it off, and then move forward, because you cannot keep going with bad habits mixed in or maybes, let's say. Oh, like maybe he sits down sometimes, or maybe when you blow the whistle, he'll sit. Like it has to be solid going. And it is, listen, it is for sure repetition to ad nauseum, right? Constant until they have it.
And when you're in those basic stages, don't look at it as going, oh, I have to go backwards. No, you're just in the same spot. You're just not going to progress. And that's okay. Not every dog goes from learning sit to going to sit on the whistle in X amount of time. Some dogs are longer, some are shorter, and that's okay. Just like we all learn at different paces, so do dogs. And you can't have an expectation or a set timeline. The dog's going to tell you when it's ready to go forward, and then you progress. And if that takes you a little longer, that's okay. Enjoy the basics. Enjoy them, because when you get those knocked out, it makes stuff in advanced training a lot easier than
Perfect.
if you just blaze through it, you're just gonna compound problems later on.
I mean, that's a huge thing. I mean, David's had many dogs just like you have, Pete. So you guys know, what I mean? And even me with having a couple dogs that I've had, I've learned on the way what to do, try to be better. Every dog's different. Like everybody's learning at their own pace, and you can't put a time limit on something for sure.
Exactly. And
Go ahead.
one, excuse me for interrupting. One, it
No, no.
brought me, I think I told you this early on when we started out. I like to tell stories, and hopefully there's some morsel of information in there that people can use. But probably the most popular retriever training book of all time is a book called Water Dog by an old timer by the name of Richard Walters.
I read it.
I knew Richard, and Richard stayed at my house many, many years ago.
Wow.
I judged the NARA National, that NARA, North American Hunting Retriever Association, was really the infancy of the hunt test program. And so I stayed at Richard's place in Virginia when I judged the NARA National. Back then, I think it was called the ALPO, was the sponsor.
Oh my
But
God.
in that book, when they revised it, Richard put in there a timeline of at this many weeks of age, your puppy should be doing this. At this many weeks of age, your puppy should be doing that. And it was one of the biggest mistakes, and he admitted to it, putting it in there, because as what David said earlier, all dogs are different, all children are different, all people are different. And by putting a general timeline in there, really wasn't fair to the dog or the people. But you know, if you get a really, what I call a well-bred, talented puppy, you might be surprised just the amount of things you can do with them at a very young age.
For sure.
And I have three Master Hunter dogs in my possession right now, and two of those dogs master titled just after 24 months of age. And the other dog, because I did a bunch of young dog derby work and field trials, so I did all field trials with him until he was beyond two. Then he titled when he was about three. But the reason I tell those stories is because these dogs are capable of a lot if
For
you
sure.
do the right things with them. But not every one of them is going to be able to do that. There's many factors come into play. It depends on the background of the dog, and it depends on the owner and the trainer.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. The one thing I did want to add, like while we're talking about like stimulation and collars and we're going through the whole thing, I will say I have used my collar a few times in a safety scenario. And what I mean by that is he is running full speed in this spot we hunt for a cripple that's running, and it runs through a barbed wire fence. And I literally stood on the whistle and I turned the collar hot, and I hit him, and I whistled again, and he didn't stop. And I put it full as high as I could go, and I one last blast. And I laid on it, and he put the brakes on and stopped. And I shit you not, Pete. It was like one of those things in a movie. He slammed on the brakes and literally was right at the fence. And I was like, because I was going to the vet for sure, because the way that he was going, he was going to rip something off him. So I for sure have used it in that situation, and I didn't feel bad turning it as hot as I did or anything that I did, because I saved myself a trip to the vet for sure.
But also, if you want a full circle moment here, he stopped and didn't freak out because he knew the command. He knew what you were asking him to do. He knew whistle meant sit. Even though there was a duck 15 feet from me going through he doesn't know it's a barbed wire fence,
For
but
sure.
full circle moment, he knew what you wanted and what was expected of him. And then did it take more stimulation than you wanted to? It did.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, safety is number one, whether you're training or hunting. And training for people, training safety for people, safety for dogs. Number one thing when we go out there, everyone wants to go home safe. And is it unfortunate that you used that much pressure? Maybe, but he knew what you wanted and he knew how to turn off the pressure, and he did that and saved yourself a nice
Buddy,
little stitches.
you know we were packing up right then and there, or at least I was, and I was, you were
stitches.
gonna stay and hunt some more, and I'm going to the emergency vet, whatever, 20 minutes away, sitting him in the front seat with whatever is bleeding. Yeah, here we go. So I figured that's something I wanted to add, because that's like one of those, do or die situations where you gotta make that decision. And it worked out. Sometimes it doesn't, but at least I had that and was ready for that, I guess.
Well, we've bred and trained these dogs. You talk about a high performance machine nowadays, and they have a great desire to find game, retrieve downed birds, and the dog doesn't know that the fence is there.
Sure.
Sometimes the handler doesn't know it's there. The hunter doesn't know it's there. So when you need to use your training collar in that situation, yeah, you can. The worst case scenario was maybe he got cut up, But you think about how many times you might be hunting, especially upland hunting, pheasants in some of these wildlife management areas, waterfowl productions areas up here in the Midwest.
Yeah.
And they're placed along busy roads. They're not along a freeway, you guys,
There
but
you go.
they are along
Yep.
busy two-lane roads
They
where the
are.
traffic is going 60 miles an hour. And the car at 60 miles an hour is very unforgiving to a dog. And so in those situations, I try and stay out of that area
Yeah.
or away from that road. But let's face it, sometimes stuff happens. And all at
For sure.
once, you see a handful of pheasants landing in a little pocket of edge of cattails along that busy road, and you're like, shoot, I can do this, and I've got control of my dog. And again, back to what I first said is these are high performance machines, and trying to stop that dog at that speed, it's
Yeah.
kind of a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
So you try and stay out of them, but when I'm in those situations, I'm probably walking with the transmitter in clipped right
Yep.
here, but I've got my hand on it and my gun in the other hand. So
For
it is.
sure.
It becomes a piece of equipment that we use for training the dog, but also generates a fair amount of safety for us when we're in the field.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt. That's awesome stuff. Listen, everything we went through is hopefully that helps somebody with a collar how to learn, how to do more. There's a ton of information. If you go to the doctor website, like you said, Pete, they can email anybody or call in if they have issues or questions or whatever. There's a lot to digest, and you don't have to do it all at once. You're going to progress as your dog progresses. So you just got to stay a little bit ahead of him so you know what to expect and be ready for it, I guess,
If they have questions on product, even the usage of the product, Mario, they can they're going to get a faster response out of social media than they will email.
For sure,
Because I'm the guy that does
manages
all of their social media questions, the technical ones,
Yeah.
and I can hop in there right now, and
Yeah, tell me where.
I can tell you how many of them
Well, tell me where to
the
send them. Do they just go to the. Go
Doctor
ahead.
Official is
Okay.
our Facebook page, and the same way with Instagram, and
Okay,
they can
Doctor
send private
Official.
messages, and
There you go.
I'm gonna see them. I'm looking at them right now.
Perfect.
So that's if they have questions on product to use, what are the differences?
Yeah.
Lorraine's done a wonderful job with our marketing, and our website and
For
our
sure.
social media sites have a lot of good usable information. But if you can't cover everything, but if they do, they can private message us, and I'll see it and respond.
There you go. And you can just go to doctor.com as well if you want. Like if you want to look at the units, check everything out, you can email
Yes,
them, you go
and
custom, you
the
go
other
everything.
thing
Yeah.
we probably didn't touch on, and I better mention it, is Dogtra.com is the official Dogtra website, okay? And the Dogtra store is not Dogtra,
Right.
okay? Dogtra Direct is not Dogtra.
You go.
Dogtra, all this other BS, that is not
Right.
that. Those are companies that have are using the Dogtra name and logo, but Dogtra.com
Is
is the
where to go.
real is the manufacturer, correct?
Awesome. All right. Appreciate it, Pete. Everything else for us at Final Approach, you can hit us up at fabrand.com. You can go to all our social pages. We do the same thing. If you got issues, you just hit us up on social, and it's probably going to be me or one of the guys in the office to answer. And if it's a product thing, it's going to be me. So once again, we appreciate Federal and Weatherby, as well as Roger Sporting Goods at Leupold, and of course, Dogtra helping us get through the season and try to educate, and just have a good time as we're doing it. So, Pete, thanks again, David. Appreciate it, you guys, and we'll throw this up on where you can get all our podcasts on Apple Podcasts and everywhere else, and is where we throw them up on our YouTube channel too, so you could watch it. And we're always showing colors and showing stuff and products. So if you want to see the video, you can jump on it there. Anything else, Pete? Or are you good?
Thank you very much. I'll talk to you soon, and have a safe and productive hunting season.
Do the same. Thank you. Thanks,
Thank
David.
you.
Thank you, guys. See you later.